this morning. We are graced in the presence of Mercy Amba Odoyeye, a Ghanaian theologian and preacher in her own right, world traveler, presently serving as Deputy General Secretary of the World Council of Churches, full of wisdom, ready to be imparted to all who will receive. Mercy, the mother of the African American women theologians, enjoys loving life, all of life. So much so that she's looking forward to retirement next year. Retirement to be with herself. But not only with herself, but also that we can throw a party at your place. Mercy Amber Odoyeye. Thank you. And thank you all for being ready to listen. And I thank especially Lois for coming first and for asking that you listen to the third world. Because indeed, after what Lois had said, I felt there was no need to continue. Lois and I share a few things. But I'm going to mention only one. We were both colonized by the British. In the past decade or so, the word community has been ringing in my ears. Wherever I go, in whatever gathering, people talk of community. They yearn for community. They lament over the absence of community. They plan to be involved in community projects. We have become conscious, not only that we are one world, but that varied as we appear to be, we are one human race. We are slowly beginning to come to terms with the fact that the one God with many names and the several religions expressing the revelation of the one God they have received is the God of all creation. The evolution of human communities as we have them could not have begun with a blueprint. I think it is the exigencies of real life issues like survival, food, shelter, defense, acquisitiveness, the normal instincts we share with all gregarious creatures must be at the root of shaping human community. My first awareness of community, my first awareness of home, was not of my father, my mother, my younger brother, and my baby sister. Oh, no. There was more than this. I do not know how many people lived in the two big houses I grew up in. And I don't know how many more were in the other two that we called kitchen. Because they were not just fireplaces. They were quadrangles around three sides of which were the rooms for the women of the community. My grandfather's part of what was a duplex that he had built together with his younger brother had his four sons, one of them being my father, and there must have been at least 10 other children. I knew who my father was, and I knew who my mother was, and I knew who was my brother, and who my baby sister was, but then everybody in that community, in those four houses, they were either big father, younger mother, bigger mother, sister, brother. There were no cousins and no aunties and no uncles. They were all family. That's how I grew up. Everybody's business was everybody else's business. And hunger was unknown. And when you are a child, that is very important. Whether you stayed in the Pramado, the men's quarters, or in Jazzy, the women's quarters, you ate. I saw birth, I saw sickness, I saw cooperative economic activities, I saw even one death, that of my grandfather. I did not have to imagine community. I had a community. As I traveled around the Akan areas of Ghana with my parents, I saw variations on the same theme. And as I grew up, I experienced the blessing and the oppression of community as crafted by the Akan. The African social ideology, which was crystallized and made known globally by Nyerere and was called Ujamaa, has often been described as communalism, an understanding of community life that expects all individuals to put into the community well-being their best efforts. People who have been brought up with linear thinking always feel very threatened when one mentions communalism. They are afraid that they will be lost in the crowd, that they will become only a number, that they will become nameless with no identity, that they will have no will and no liberty. This is far from the case, as the imperative of this model of community is mutuality. Mutuality operates not only between groups, but also between individuals. We say antelopes walk in pairs so that they might blow the specks from each other's eyes. Mutual caring is the center of the communal ideology. Individuals are recognized for their contribution. They have to excel in caring. Africans know that it is the individual who kills, who hunts for and kills an elephant for the whole village to share. So, close to this ideology has to be the question also of reciprocity. The left hand beats the right hand, and the right hand beats the left hand. What the left hand does to the right hand does to the left hand. So the Akan teach their children, do not do to people what you would not like them to do to you. People are respected as individuals, but no one is a being apart. Each one of us carries in his or her makeup the generations that make up the family, seen and unseen. The child of 10 deserves all care and respect due to the grandparents. The child is in the grandparents, and the grandparents are in the child. You remember Hyun-kyung yesterday? This principle tones down the otherwise gerontocratic leanings of this culture. We say, one may not wear a child's ring, but that does not prevent one from sharing a child's food. The participation of children in the welfare of the community is marked in a very dramatic way in Cameroon by one of the groups, and this was told to me by Grace Eneme from Cameroon. She says, when a child is born, the after birth is buried in the backyard, and a plantain, the big form of banana, is planted on the place where the afterbirth has been put. By the time the child is old enough to eat plantains, that plantain has fruited. And then it is cut. And it is cooked. And it is shared, not only to that household or the enlarged family, but the whole community eats. In this way, this child, even before he or she knows how to plant, is already contributing to the welfare of the community. The child, too, has become a source of sustenance for the community. Sharing is the thread with which the fabric of community is woven. Sharing is a strong mark of community. Ordinary meals, feasts, ritual meals, these are what binds the whole family, seen and unseen, together. In Africa, we make sure that this sharing goes beyond the family to the whole community. Birth, naming, rites of adulthood, marriage, death, all these are community events with elements of communal eating and praying and dancing. We share our struggles and our triumphs, and it is in doing this that we encounter the presence of God among us. The spirituality that sustains this theocentric culture has been evident in people's struggles for liberation from socio-political and economic disasters. We continue to operate on the basis that people matter. And all economic domination that touches the primary needs of people is seen as an attempt to destroy our communalism. People do their best to resist such trends. This sharing of one another's life crisis generates a theology of conversion to the center, conversion to the other, conversion to the margins. We cannot claim a conversion towards God without experiencing a conversion to the other human being. They are two sides of the same coin. Closer to God is closer to humanity, or it is a lie. We say often that when one member suffers or is humiliated, the whole body is affected. Now, reimagining Africa, the people's resistance to oppression, racism, dictatorship is all part of the will to maintain the dignity of persons within a healthy community. Liberation of the whole community becomes a central theme of theology. Africans are theologizing out of the economic, political, and racial tensions of that continent. The protests, we believe, are inspired of God. They are rebellion against death. They are rebellion against domination. The multiple oppressions of Africa is confronted by a multiple spirituality, as it would be without the element of love if it were not gearing towards unwholesomeness. This communitarian structure assumes that all worked hard who could, and it upheld the principle that persons are more important than wealth. So no one was to be left hungry or sick, even if it was obvious that this person is being idle. Sharing was a style of life, where such a community was multi-religious, respect was assumed. It's true that the new religions, Christianity and Islam, were not as hospitable. When people who had become converted to these two religions refused to participate in African ritual, they are performed on their behalf anyway. This coherence of community, though it was not a perfect arrangement, it was an attempt to honor the humanity of all and the imperative of a coherent community. This mutuality, caring, solidarity, these are what have become for me the building blocks for my utopian community. This community for me is based on the belief that all human beings are children of God, that all of us have mothers watching from the spirit world, and that things that happen to us, they hurt those mothers, and those mothers in the spirit world are going to make sure, and whether you like it or not, they are going to make sure that the people who do us injustice, they get it back. The people in these communities belong to each other and to God. And the community is to nurture them into full humanity. Mother Earth and the rest of creation sustain us. We dare not bite the hands that feed us. In the early 19th century, European missionaries to Ghana, especially from Basel and Bremen, saw the communities that I have tried to describe, and they felt that it was about time Africans transcended this primitive way of trying to live together. They imagined Africans as needing to outgrow coherence, tried to get them to be cultivated into black pietist Akan. They attempted to change the architecture and the clothing and the crafts. They introduced new economic activities and promoted the money economy already launched by the contact with the European traders who bought gold with shells and who gave gunpowder in exchange for human beings. They imagined an African people fully steeped in European Christianity, singing translations of European hymns, praying European prayers, and of course, it did not all work in this gross manner. A people's soul cannot be so completely taken over. The result of this interaction is a distinctive Christianity with its own spirituality. It's partly creative, partly imitative, but in a large measure, it is definable and identifiable as African and Christian, in that order. At least it was so among the Akan. At least it was so among the Ashanti of Ghana. I picked up recently a book about the Ashanti with a subtitle that said, People with a Soul. And the book starts, In the beginning, God created the earth and the drama. And the drama was discovered by Uti Atente. Atente. Ten, ten, ten. That's how the drum sounds. What the Ashanti are doing is this. They are saying, Uti Atente, the ruler of the 13th century, had something to do with creation. The Ashantis are seeing themselves as unique, like all people see themselves as unique. And their ruler was there with God at the beginning. The creation story, the human culture, begins, of course, with us, the Ashanti. They valued unity, and they worked for it. They promoted communal life. They are my mother's people, and the people among whom I spent most of my formative years, and the people who gave this to the United Nations, the Kente cloth. We are brought up with such a sense of self-esteem and a deep commitment to the community that it is very difficult to shake up. Doesn't matter whether you become brain damaged or not. I cannot shake off the adage that one person's misfortune is another's, because I have grown up on folk tales that instill this. Now just listen to this. Once there was a bird that woke up in the morning. The sun was up, it was all bright and shining, stood on the highest point of the tree, flapped up its feathers, I think it must have been a male, and started singing its heart out. There was a tortoise foraging in the leaves below, and the tortoise lifted its head and said to the bird, please stop singing. Be quiet. And the bird sang even more. And then there was a hunter who was also out looking for his part of what will become the food of the day. And the hunter saw the bird and he went, bah! And the bird came fluttering, bam. Quite close to where the tortoise was. And the hunter comes round looking for the bird. The hunter picks the bird. Oh, bonus! The tortoise. And picks the tortoise too. And the tortoise
lifts its head and tells the dying bird, I told you so.
Now, enough of tales. We are talking about community and theology. And I am saying, that's what I'm saying. Studying the development of Christian theology, I was struck by the elements in the Trinitarian theology that I felt had inspired the caring and mutuality of the pre-Akan community, the pre-Christian Akan community. What the early church taught about the triune God demanded my attention. I never understood the mathematics of it. But as a community of three persons, the mutuality and the love was so perfect, I could agree to see them as one being. If a company of three can be manifested as one, then I said to myself, I'm willing to live with the blundering attempts of the Akan to be a community. And how did we come to this doctrine? It was crafted between two poles, the so-called Gentile, Greek, Roman, 1001 gods, and the Yahweh, the jealous one of the Jews, and the Christians were somewhere in between. The basic philosophical problem that we continue to face, of what do we do when we are faced with the one and the many, the individual and the community. Reimagining community today, we continue to face this challenge. Family loyalty, ethnic groups, tribal allegiance, religious adherence, social, economic, color, gender, they all bring tensions, confrontations, temptations, sometimes compromise. Women in the church versus the church as a whole. I still believe that this symbol of the Christian faith could inform our imagining of community and inspire us not only to reimagine, but to begin to live as if that imagination were already a reality. Reimagining community is women living beyond patriarchy in the midst of patriarchy. And resisting the same in the name and for the sake of God, creation, and humanity. Lois had already told you the story of the decade. In the ecumenical movement, and especially in the World Council of Churches, the word community is becoming attached more and more to the word Eucharist. And we are talking of Eucharistic community. But then, it is the women who seems to be seeking community and ensuring community. The decade that we honor today grew out of a study, a consultation in Berlin, which had a name that in those days I was a little younger, I didn't know what they were talking about. They called it sexism in the 70s. And you can imagine all the remarks, those of us who at that point were not really, you know, we hadn't grown our feminist antenna yet. So we had all kinds of things to say about sexism in the 70s. But it is out of that that we have come to where we are today. It seems to me, however, that reimagining the church as an inclusive community has been left in the hands of women. Women have imagined and brought into being several communities, including churches. Women theologians have proposed many new ways of envisioning the church. You all know Letty's writings on the church. Women have reimagined the church as a non-hierarchical, a partnership, a sitting in the round. Once a group of us women, I think there were eight of us, had to sensitize the Lambeth Conference on women's issues. And we paid so much attention to the process and the format, how we were going to be seated, and how very slowly we will move until we become a circle. My sisters and my brothers, we had a shock. The conference table, like that one, was fixed. The table was fixed, so we couldn't become a circle. And we couldn't move it. Sometimes I feel that is where we are with some of our attempts. And we are going to need all the strength. And we are going to need the men and the women who understand God and community. Because we are going to have to shift those fixed tables. Now, this Eucharistic community that our churches pretend to be, I'm asking, can we call our churches Eucharistic communities? Are they homes where looking different and being different are accepted and appreciated? A home where the tone of one's skin and one's gender makes no difference to one's participation and partnership? If we have ringing in our ears words like homophobia, racist, apartheid, ethnic cleansing, caste, name them. Go ahead, name them. Name those words that are not community building. I like to hear them. There we are. They are there. When we continue to hear these words, even in the church, then the church is failing its duty to mirror the community of the Trinity. For this community, I think it is worth recalling at least one biblical symbol here. We are in good company. If we can speak with Isaiah, they shall not hurt or destroy in all my holy mountain, says God. We are in good company if we can say with the author of Revelations, there shall be an end to death and to mourning and crying and pain, for the old order has passed away. Now, just imagine an Africa where there are no tears, no premature deaths, where people plant and eat what they grow, where dying children are not left for vultures to feed on. Can you imagine Uganda? A people without HIV, AIDS? A people who are beyond the reach of hunger and often creating circumstances? Can you imagine Kenya blooming not only with flowers and jacaranda trees and wildlife parks and tourists, but with a people upright and speaking words of truth and peace and justice? Reimagine South Africa without violence and intentionally structured poverty, seeing the human race as one with a diversity that is to be enjoyed. Over much of Africa, reimagining community includes struggling for our common humanity, because sometimes even our humanity is in question. We are struggling against political and military conflicts, strife and death and devastation. There are Christian communities in Africa beginning to shed the mentality of minding the shops that were set up by the missionaries. And they are beginning to reimagine what they will look like, what they will feel like, what they will act like if they were true Eucharistic communities. Too long has the community of Christians in Africa and other institutions maintained and been stifled by the Bwana mentality. This mentality of looking over your shoulders to see whether the North approves. People had lived under the illusion that Euro-American philosophies, lifestyles, church life cannot be faulted. But today, there is enough interaction and a constant revelation of worldwide turmoils that Africans can say to their erstwhile northern mentors what the goat said to its owner. So, one can give birth to only one child. I think I have to tell the story. There was a woman who had one goat, fed this goat and pampered it, and the goat, every time it got pregnant, this woman was really very excited, and then the goat had one kid, and the woman got very angry. "You are a useless goat. You just eat for nothing." And the goat's very sad. Then they reconcile, and the goat is pregnant again and has one kid. And the woman gets very angry. Okay. Now, as time goes on, the woman gets pregnant, and the goat waits. And the goat waits and waits. And the woman gives birth one child. So the goat looks up and says, "Oh, so when one is pregnant, one can give birth to one child." That's what we are looking up in the north now and saying. So there is tribalism in the north. Wow. I couldn't believe it that Europeans will have ethnic cleansing. I didn't believe. The first time I came, I confronted the fact that if someone says, "I'm a lesbian, I'm gay," then that person comes under physical persecution. Jesus, I couldn't believe it. So, when one is pregnant, one gives birth to one kid. What I'm saying is we are all in this together. That's where the connectedness is. The community we are seeking is not an African community, a Canadian one, a Korean one, a Christian one. We are seeking a holistic, human, global community. We are in this together just as we are in it together for the decade and more. And let me end with my second biblical image. It seems to me that we can only liberate our capacity for imagining if we believe that it is possible to have a jubilee. If after 50 years under human structures that benefit only a few, all was to be returned to God and be redistributed on this Sabbath of Sabbaths. Sound the trumpet throughout the land. The jubilee is for all. Proclaim liberty throughout the land. The jubilee is for all. You shall return. You shall return to slavery in an alien land? No. You shall return home to property, to power, to be human again. All creation is included in our reimagining. We shall not starve if we let go. We shall not starve if we do not cheat. All shall be forgiven, debts and all shall live fully. Humanity, your humanity, my humanity, is enhanced, not dulled, by the full humanity of others. You know, rereading the Leviticus passage, it's a long one on the Jubilee, I was struck by the fear of hunger and the insistence that the land belongs to God. So I was happy that my president mentioned land. I should say it again, because that is for those of us in the South where the whole problem was and still is. Reimagining community for the authors of Leviticus included concern for housing, employment, resident aliens, slaves. Not only does the land belong to God, all the people belong to God. Jesus said, "As you have done to one of these, you have done to me." My logic says, the people is Jesus, and Jesus is the people. Just imagine, if we truly, as I used to do with my Sunday school kids, can you truly do this to Jesus that you are doing to your friend there? We are building Jubilee communities. But Jubilee communities have always been communities of struggle. Communities who swim against the stream of what is easily achieved. Let me end with the story of a circle. I started my work life as a school teacher and a Sunday school teacher, little one. And I always observed how the children, these little children, they sat doing their work and they will cover it. You know? And then I would say, but why? They were playing together out there. Why is the teamwork stopped at the playing field? Why can't they achieve together? Why can't they solve this arithmetic problem together? I always felt very uncomfortable. It's we who are instilling in these children the absence of a sense of community. because we want them to achieve. And then I found myself in a men's team teaching theology. And the isolation became unbearable. And I said to myself, I am sure there are other African women on this continent in my situation, amidst men learning or teaching or doing theology. I am going to find them. And we found each other. And we called ourselves the Circle of Concerned African Women Theologians. And at least one person is here, Louise Tapper, somewhere around here. And what we are doing is trying to build a community of women theologians who would say, and any of them, and say it much better, how we see and how we imagine Africa. I was privileged to spend a day with the Circle in Cape Town. Now, reimagining the educational process offered to young people has resulted in a system of mentoring, of sharing, that is energizing the women theologians in Africa. They are reimagining the community together. They are reimagining what it would be if we are continuously affirming our humanity and affirming the possibility for good of the human race. A reaffirmation of community and its reflection of what constitutes the divine, that which holds the whole creation together as a living, lively, and life-giving community. Reimagine and re-reimagine, but as you do so, remember, the harvesting and the eating go on at the same time. Thank you.